This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have spent far too long time discussing the place of Africa in our continent without discussing our place in the world and projecting our interests outwards.
That was Ghana's permanent representative to the European Union on the need for Africa to assert its collective economic power and show good governance. Details coming up. Also, the daughter of a Nigerian immigrant has emerged as a candidate to replace Boris Johnson as Britain's prime minister. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Pro-democracy groups in Sudan are closing ranks against coup leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, rejecting his offer of a civilian government as protesters keep pressing for his resignation. I asked Saleh Mahmoud, president of the Darfur Lawyers Association, what this situation means for the country moving forward.
Majority of the people of Sudan are saying since independence in 1967 up to this moment, the military ruled the country almost 57 years out of 66 years of independence. Almost the collapse of the country and crisis, genocide, wars, displacement, and corruption, the result of this corrupt rulers of the military. This is the demand that there's no space for the military to rule the country anymore. This is the major demand. Other demands are also justice and accountability due to the fact that a huge number of violations of basic human rights, starting from killings and torture, occurred during the times revolution of 2019. Up to this moment, but there was some increase after the coup of the 26th of October last year. This is why people are asking for justice and accountability. It's almost known that the military rulers, starting from the transitional military council up to this moment, are responsible for this violation, atrocities that occurred during the whole period of the military coup. Since 11th of April 2019 up to this moment, this is the second coup, and that is why protests and sit-ins are continuing. People are determined to see the result, which is very, very specific. That is, military should exclude itself from ruling the country. This is the third thing. There is no compromise. There is no idea of partnership again with the military. The majority of the people are saying that they continue demonstrating and organizing citizens until the military coup authority is pressured to resign. That is.
Mr. Saleh, what do you think Mr. Burhan promises to make way for a civilian government. At the same time, he wants to establish a new Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. What does that mean?
This proposal has been rejected by the people because it's a futile effort again to maintain power. That is, on one side he's saying, yes, I am ready to surrender authority to the civilian-led government. He's saying that. But at the same time, he's saying the Supreme Council today is transferred to a higher military apparatus, that is the security, an organization that is responsible for ruling the country instead of the military itself. That is the point. The point that they are not far away from ruling the country. And again, he's telling the people that you should do this and that. The military has the control and monopoly. Hamburg said 80% of the resources are in the hands of the military. So this is why they are preparing themselves to again come back again through rigged elections to rule the country the same way they used to do 30 years ago.
The way you're explaining it, there is no end in sight. The protests will continue and the military will still maintain its power.
Exactly. That is what is happening today. Indications are sufficient to tell us that it is a tactic that they are trying to maintain power through different tactics. And the fact is that majority of the people, especially the resistance groups, aware of the fact that these are only tactics. There's no credibility at all regarding this kind of proposals. And this is why protests will continue, especially after the Eid holidays.
That was Saleh Mahmoud, president of the Darfur Lawyers Association, speaking with me from Khartoum. Mali's military government has arrested nearly 50 Ivorian troops to provide support to a contingent of the UN mission, calling them mercenaries. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
Mali's military government arrested 49 soldiers from Ivory Coast on their arrival at Bamako's airport Sunday evening, accusing them of being mercenaries. Government spokesperson Abdoulaye Maiga read an official statement on state TV ORTM Monday night, which was posted to the station's Facebook page.
Le gouvernement de la transition les considère comme des mercenaires.
He says the transitional government considers them mercenaries as defined by the African Union Convention on the Elimination of Mercenaryism in Africa. Maiga says the soldiers were working for Sahelian Aviation Services, a company contracted by Mali's UN mission. He asked during the address that the company leave Malian territory immediately. Rumors circulated on pro-government social media accounts Monday of an attempted coup d'etat, which the military government did not address or clarify, only accusing the soldiers of planning to break the dynamics of the refoundation and security of Mali. Maiga references a 1977 African Union convention aimed at eliminating mercenaries on African soil due to the grave threat which the activities of mercenaries present to the independence, sovereignty, territorial integrity, and harmonious development of African Union member states. Mali's military government itself has been accused of working with mercenaries from the Russian Wagner Group. They have continually denied the presence of mercenaries, claiming to work only with Russian instructors. However, in several incidents in central and northern Mali, locals have told journalists and human rights groups they have seen Russian mercenaries committing human rights abuses while working with the Malian army. Olivier Salgado, spokesperson for the UN mission to Mali, MINUSMA, tweeted on Monday that soldiers are not part of one of the contingents of MINUSMA, but are logistical support on behalf of one of our contingents. MINUSMA's mandate was renewed last month, though the Malian representative to the UN said during a Security Council meeting the government will not allow them to carry out investigations of human rights abuse accusations, a part of their mandate. Sanctions imposed in January by ECOWAS, the regional bloc, were lifted in July after the junta proposed a 2024 election plan. The lifting of sanctions allowed ambassadors from neighboring states to return to Bamako and opened borders between Mali and ECOWAS countries, including Ivory Coast. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
The daughter of Nigerian immigrants has emerged as a candidate to replace Boris Johnson as Britain's prime minister. Kemi Badenoch, a rising star in right-wing politics, is among 11 declared candidates for the top spot with no clear favorites. She was elected to parliament for the first time in 2017 and has held junior ministerial jobs, most recently as Minister of Equalities, but has never served in cabinet. The 42-year-old Badenoch has said she believes the government has lost its way. She wants limited government, lower taxes, tighter spending, and a focus on the essentials. Her father, Femi Adigoke, died from a brain tumor 5 months ago. She says he instilled in her a sense of personal responsibility. The new leader would be chosen in a two-stage election by the 358 conservative lawmakers, and then the whole conservative membership. Olympic champion Mo Farah revealed in an article published yesterday that he was brought to Britain illegally under the name of another child to work as a domestic servant. Farah told the BBC that he was given the name Mohamed Farah by a woman who flew him to Britain from the East African country Djibouti when he was 9 years old. The 39-year-old, whose father was killed in Somalia when he was 4 years old, said he was separated from his mother. Farah said his real name is Hussein Abdi Kahin and claimed he was made to look after another family's children in Britain. Farah, who later became the first British track and field athlete to win 4 Olympic gold medals, said his children have motivated him to be truthful about his past. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us at voaafrica.com. University students in Kenya have begun a nationwide peace and voting campaign ahead of the August 9th election. Organizers say the goal is to discourage young people from getting involved in election violence and to encourage them to vote instead. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Election violence has marred Kenya's past elections. In 2007, the worst year yet, more than 1,000 people were killed after the elections. Kenya also lacks accountability for human rights abuses, according to Human Rights Watch. A survey by Kenya National Cohesion and Integration Commission, an agency promoting government unity, shows that 6 counties are likely to experience electoral violence. As the August 9 general election approach, university students are teaming up to campaign against election violence among their peers through a new peace association. Alan Chacha is the association's director.
The same student who have been trained as voter, master campus trainers on voter education, are the same people who are leading in terms of championing for peace. So just recently we launched the 47 days of peace, and this one we launched it specifically when we had remained 47 days to the general election. So on a daily basis we are having peace work.
Peace advocates say young people are most easily exploited and manipulated into engaging in violence. According to Global Peace Foundation Kenya Director Daniel Omondi, that is especially so because many are unemployed. National government figures show that some 5 million Kenyan youth are out of work.
They are available for recruitment into extremism. And politicians, you know, mainly target these young people because they're the people who, you know, can be misused for as little as 100 shillings.
100 shillings is an equivalent to about 85 cents in U.S. currency. In a peace drive dubbed Nitatenda Wajibu Wangu, meaning I'll do my part in Swahili, students from 75 universities and colleges pledged to cast their vote and encourage others to do so. Margaret Mushoki, a student leader at Daystar University, told VOA that they're using social media to reach their target audience.
The bigger picture is if also you participate in causing violence and not voting, and we don't have classes, we don't have schools, our careers stop, you know, you're going to be affected in one way or another.
The August poll will be Kenya's third election under the constitution established in 2010, and the Nationwide Youth Peace Initiative members hope for a calm transition. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Libya's parliament-appointed Prime Minister Fatih Bashagha says he plans to take office in Tripoli in the coming days as some armed militias have changed their position and have nothing against him entering the capital. Angry Libyans have taken to the streets across the country to demand an end to the illegitimate bodies that the international community insists on putting in charge of Libya's future, decrying their expired mandate. Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, discussed what these developments could lead to with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
So this will be the third time that Bashagha has tried to enter Tripoli by force. The last two times he didn't succeed, and armed militias who were opposed to him forced him out. There wasn't too much violence on those occasions. However, what we're seeing now is that he and his government are becoming increasingly desperate. They haven't been able to take power in Tripoli or gain any access to state funds. And so we could see quite a desperate move this week by Bashagha and his allied militias to enter Tripoli. The danger with that is, with tensions high and this desperation, that violence could escalate. And we're expecting to see him moving in probably from the south of Tripoli with support from some Zintani armed groups. And this could lead to a pushback from other groups within the city. And there's a real risk of fighting escalating. And it still seems unlikely at this moment that he will succeed in forcing the government of national unity Prime Minister Dabeiba out of office. So we could see some escalating tensions and violence in the coming days, unfortunately.
Plurality of angered Libyans have taken to the streets last week across Libya, demanding an end to the illegitimate bodies that the international community insists on putting in charge of Libya's future, decrying their expired mandate. Should the international community drop its support for these entities and introduce a new roadmap to end the Libyan political crisis?
Yes, so at present, the Libyan kind of political situation is very up in the air. The UN process to try and agree a constitutional basis for elections has failed. It hasn't really gone anywhere. And the international community at the moment really doesn't seem to have a backup plan. And that does mean that there's no real way forward at the moment. And this has been part of the reason for this anger. It's correct, I think, that the international community is supporting the House of Representatives and the High State Council, who have been around for several years now and are a big part of the problem. I think any political process that relies on them to agree to elections and process forward is going to fail. They ultimately don't want to have elections because that will end up with them losing their power. However, the problem at the moment is there isn't an obvious alternative, and the international community certainly hasn't been able to agree on one way forward. So I think it will be very important in the coming weeks for something to emerge. But at the moment, as expressed by the anger felt by so many Libyans, there isn't an obvious way forward, and it's being left very open-ended.
That was Rhiannon Smith from Libya's analysis, speaking to VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. Ghana's permanent representative to the European Union, Harriet Boateng, says it's up to Africa to assert its collective economic power by taking ownership of its resources. Darren Taylor reports.
Harriet Sena Sior Boateng says she's seen a gradual but meaningful embrace of Africa and things African in Europe over the past 5 years or so.
I just got back from Lisbon, and I was telling everybody from the airport through to the hotel, the restaurants, in every corridor, there was the Afrobeats. And you can imagine how many Europeans were singing, even tunes that I couldn't mention these Yoruba words, they were singing. And I was so amazed.
The Oxford University-educated barrister and solicitor has been Ghana's EU head of mission and ambassador to Belgium and Luxembourg since 2019.
We have spent far too long time discussing the place of Africa in our continent without discussing our place in the world and projecting our interests outwards. This notwithstanding, the extent of Africa's diplomatic influence depends on being able to sustain common positions. This requires a capacity first to identify what Africa's interests are and then to articulate them.
Boateng's vision is for African governments to stop prioritizing bilateral relations with richer countries in favor of stronger relationships with fellows on the continent. She's a key figure in negotiations around the Cotonou Agreement between the EU and the African, Caribbean, and Pacific states, the so-called ACP countries. Some of the treaty's aims are to reduce poverty and to integrate the ACP countries into the global economy. Boateng's experience in these talks has shown her that Africa no longer allows external values to be imposed on it.
During our recent negotiations, the EU came under intense and immense pressure. The EU member states had to make concessions on issues of sexuality, marriage, and gender. Our values on these issues are deeply rooted in the fabric of many African societies, and it is both unfair and patronizing for Europe simply to characterize our approach as a leftover colonial rule. We did not accept that, and we pushed them back on that. We told them what was red lines, and those could not be crossed. Marriage, gender, and sexuality had to be respected through the lenses of an African.
Boateng wants Africa to take a similarly strong position when dealing with questions of trade, for example, with powerful regions. Like it or not, she says, Africans all too often feel their views and positions are inferior.
Africa can best represent its values to the world when it stops feeling the need to apologize for them. When you have to start explaining or justifying yourself, you have already lost the argument.
Despite the challenges and the negativity raised every time there's conflict or a coup on the continent, Boateng's confident.
Africa will undoubtedly be a diplomatic force of the 21st century. Our young population and our growing middle class are unstoppable political forces.
Boateng is, however, the first to acknowledge that such forces won't just fall into Africa's lap, and that they need to be won by gaining the respect of the world, and especially of the powerful economic blocs. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
An African summit on promoting constitutionalism and protecting democracy resolved to put more pressure on the continent's leadership to respect democratic principles, particularly term limits. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokondisi Dube has the details.
Participants at the summit organized by the National Democratic Institute, NDI, and the Botswana government urged adherence to democratic principles and promotion of constitutionalism. The meeting resolved that civic society groups should play a prominent role in ensuring leaders respect the rule of law. Presenting the summit's final declaration, Dola Mguni, Director of Ethics and Integrity in Botswana's Minister of State President, said African leaders should not cling to power. A number of African leaders have changed the rules to run their countries for decades.
We regret that reluctance by some leaders to adhere to the term limits denies youth opportunities for their participation in peaceful and orderly renewal of political leadership and alternation of power.
Mguni says among the resolutions the summit attendees want to see increased dialogue on promoting democracy and constitutionalism.
We further affirm and commit ourselves to the following. Number one, promoting and defending principles of constitutionalism and enhancing democratic consolidation. We, the signatories, commit to creating synergies among Africans at both the grassroots and leadership levels, aimed at consolidating constitutionalism and bolstering democratic resilience. Add our voices to efforts in favor of respecting and restoring term limits.
Days after the summit, Rwanda President Paul Kagame announced he was seeking a fourth term, which has attracted criticism from some quarters. He earlier pushed through changes to the two-term limit that allowed him to serve his current time in office. The Habron summit made calls for the continent to isolate leadership which violates democratic principles. National Democratic Institute Africa Director Christopher Fumunyo says some countries like Botswana have set good examples of how democracy functions.
That we don't have to generate unnecessary conflict or conflictual relationships between governments and civil society. We all care about our people. We care about our countries. We mean well for our continent. Let us find ways to work together and to leverage everything positive that each and every one of us can bring to the table.
The Habron meeting was a follow-up to the 2019 summit held in Niger, which called on leaders to respect constitutional term limits. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habron, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.